Previously on the Simply Human podcast.
By the way, oh, we're still guessing.
There's one. Yeah,
we do this for another hour.
Okay.
One of us guesses, so.
This is the whole interview.
Okay, okay,
until we get it.
I speed this up a little.
Okay. April 9th.
No.
October 17th.
No.
Oh, okay, now okay. You tell
what
us.
What is it?
Rick, you were insanely close.
What?
Insanely close. June 10th is the birthday.
Rick! It's episode 227 of the Simple Human Podcast with your hosts, Mark and Rick. Two human beings being human. Our goal is to help you understand how humans are designed to eat, sleep, move, and enjoy, and how you can start living more like a human today. On today's show, it is Corey Mascara. I'm very excited about this. This is going to be an Enjoy Life episode. He is interested in what makes life deeply fulfilling. He's lived as a monk. He studied with some of the world's leading researchers on happiness and continues to be insatiably curious about how to help people live well. Corey is on the show.
Good.
I emailed him this morning.
It'll be a fun deal.
I have to watch you, Rick.
Why do you have to watch me?
Because last time we recorded, you flipped off the camera randomly, and I had to go in and bleep that out.
I've got five fingers, okay? What's wrong with this?
Man. You know what? It's a social construct. Let's talk about cussing. Cussing.
Oh, man. You're going to open up a can of worms.
No, we're not going to cuss. Here's my stance on... Here's our stance on cussing. If
you sound like an old country man when you say...
Here's
cussing.
Our stance on cussing. All right. This is like when Haven was like, y'all going to be cussing. My daughter. Murder. The act of murder isn't... This took a turn.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Hope we enjoy life later.
The act of murder is inherently evil, right? It's not, there's no, now murder, not like killing, you know, if you have to kill someone in a war or something, or self-defense, right?
Okay.
Cold-blooded murder is not interpreted. Let's go back to before the show.
Webster's people on the phone here. We've got a new word.
Right. You get my point. There are certain things that are inherently evil. I like my shirt, by the way. Simply Human.
Yeah. You like my shirt? I love how I dressed up with a shirt with a hole in it for our video thing.
Okay. The word, like the S word, S-H-I-T, is not inherently evil. The interpretation of that word, right? So if you are speaking to someone who is not offended by that word, then it's not a bad thing. That's my stance.
Yeah.
But if you are around children.
Kids are running behind you.
I know. People who are offended by that, case in point.
I don't know if they'd be offended by it. I think that.
That's when. You know that story? Cool. When I was telling her about the Tournament of Champions thing, she's asking me, like, what do y'all do? And I'm explaining, we go shoot sporting clays and we play ping pong and we compete. Da, da, da. And she was like, she's like, y'all gonna be drinking beer? And I was like, well, I mean, guys, we'll have beer and we'll have little coolers out when we're doing our games and stuff, but we'd stay at the house. There's nobody's driving. We're very safe and responsible about it. She was like, y'all gonna be cussing? And I was like, all right, you know what? I don't need this interrogation.
I love how our second episode of like actual video has turned into me making faces.
Yeah. When FaceTime was first a thing, I remember I FaceTimed my brother Jeff, Simply Human's own Jeff, and all we did the whole time was just like.
I did a Zoom meeting the other day, and the person, one of the people on the tiles didn't really get that, like, hey, just be still, and like, she was talking, and she was like this, and like, I was hysterically laughing. I was like, she doesn't know that we can see this?
Yeah. So
my stance on swearing is kind of the same. Like I wouldn't swear around my grandparents,
right?
Obviously, because they're old. Well, they're
dead.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Trying not to think about it today.
Way to go, Gordon.
I wouldn't swear around my grandparents, obviously. I will swear around my parents.
Really? I swear around my parents now.
and the reasoning behind it is. And I don't want to, like, offend anybody. I'm not going to use any words. But, like, it's just a word. And if you're like really, really deeply offended by a word that has like a billion synonyms that we can all use, like instead of S-H-I-T, if I said poop, you wouldn't be offended.
Or like dadgummit.
It's literally just the sequence of those four letters put together. Like, I don't have time for that.
Right, right.
Like,
right.
I have a very wide-ranging vocabulary. I need to have all of the words at my disposal to get my point across.
Right.
And sometimes that means using a well-placed F-bomb.
What human doesn't smash their thumb with a hammer and says SOB or something?
I told you when I smashed my thumb in the car.
Yes.
Right? It's like starting to grow back.
Ugh.
But like, that's the one time where it would have been totally appropriate for me to just yell out in the neighborhood. Oh, but it hurt so bad. It like sucked all of the wind straight out of me. And
so you
I couldn't even talk.
Noise.
I was like.
SOB is kind of my go-to, like if I hurt myself, like son of a. You know, and then I'll
go straight MF-er.
To the F bomb.
Like,
here's a question
directly to the MF.
Jen's mom around the children will go, let's say she's holding something, she drops it, she'll go, ocean.
Ocean.
Like she'll say ocean. But didn't you think that I was about to cuss? Didn't you think I was about to say OS?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't like when she does that. But then it's like, who cares? Ocean.
It's just a word, man. It's just a word. And like in an important meeting, if I was sitting at a conference, well, no, that's wrong because I work in a weird industry. I don't work in a library. And so like it's not uncommon to be walking down the hall by my office and hear me or ask me something. And, F. Like the police business is a little bit different. So
tú no trabajas un biblioteca?
I'm sorry? You sounded like a white guy trying to speak Spanish. I didn't understand.
Well, accent. You nailed it. That's what I am.
Nailed it.
You did it. Okay, so when I emailed Corey this morning, my phone auto-corrected it to Cody, and I sent it. And so he wrote back like, yeah, we're good. By the way, my name's Corey. And we've actually had Corey scheduled in March, and then COVID happened, and so I wrote him back, and I was like, dude, I knew your name was Corey. I hate when people spell my name with a D. And I was like, no disrespect. I have my Rogers No D shirt somewhere. okay, I have a question for you. We have 4 minutes before Corey Mascara joins. Okay. Two questions.
Can you turn more lights on in here, by the way?
I think it's okay. I don't know. Okay. We got our dim stuff on. It's late. Okay. It's 8:30. Everyone knows when we record. No, they don't. Two questions very quickly. First, what is your favorite? This is a question that I've asked like several different groups, and this has been an interesting topic. What is your favorite room in your house right now, and why?
Favorite room in my house?
1 second. I need to turn my camera off.
Uh-oh.
Halen needs to run by. Go on. It's off. And we're back. Yes, he is laughing at you. Go. Favorite room in the house. And we'll ask Corey these questions too.
I don't think I've ever like ranked the rooms the rooms in my house. I mean, I spend a lot of time in my living room.
Where you're sitting now.
Yeah, that's
my
where
bed,
I'm sitting now.
My guest bed.
Yeah, you slept on the bed, on the couch. I spend a lot of time in here. I mean, I don't have like a ranking of like rooms 1 through, how many rooms do I have?
Oh,
bragging montage. At 3.
Cue the Vivaldi.
You know,
what room is
kitchen?
You're like the room where my silver is, I think, is where I spend the most time yelling at my butler.
Might be my kitchen because I enjoy cooking.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, like, that's a good answer.
I guess I've never thought about it.
It's a good answer. And just depending on what phase of life you're in, it's interesting what room is your favorite, right? When you're a kid, your favorite room is your room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just changes.
I used to do this thing when I was like 9 or 10 years old, and I would pretend that my room was like an apartment, and I would nerd alert, and I would put like 2B, like a little sign on the front, on the door. And
you come home, you get your keys out, like, oh,
I would take my
door.
Trash can, and I would put it out in the hallway, like I saw in all the TV shows.
Seinfeld.
Yeah. 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 So I was pretty big nerd.
Would you bust into your room like Kramer?
No.
That wasn't like Kramer.
But someone did get out of a shower at work the other day like that. They slipped and they went right through the curtain, like right across the hall. I was like, oh, easy there, Cosmo. That's stuff flopping all over the place.
The second question is this. What practice that you or society has picked up during this pandemic that you hope stays? You know what I mean? Like taking your shoes off at the airport was a pre 9/11 thing.
See, for me, it's different because my life is not tremendously different because I still have to go to the office.
True.
Really, the only thing that's different. Well, really, the only thing that's different is like I don't like when I take the boys out to eat. Like we don't go to a restaurant. Like we get it and bring it back. But for me, I have started running again. And the only point, the only reason, and it wasn't like, man, I'm getting real good shape. Literally the only reason is
you're bored.
Like, man, I got a lot of time on my hands here. So I'm like, well, I might as well go get, you know, I'm not running for time. I'm not trying to like, you know, used to be, I would, you know, try to get it to a certain time.
Right.
For
just running for just to be outside and moving and
getting
sweating.
Some vitamin D and, you know, outside and enjoying it. I'd like to continue that, but I do see a whole lot of people. More so than before, like families taking a walk.
Right.
So I think probably, I hope people hang on to like the family time,
right.
The extra family time. Now I know like if you're indoor, you know, the typical family, if you're not at, you know, you're not going to the office, the kids aren't going to school, you're crammed in the house and you're probably all ready to like strangle the crap out of each other. But like, I would like to see people maintain maybe that kind of familial, like, hey, let's do stuff together.
Yes. Together. That, yeah, that's a good answer. I think that may be my answer,
Thank
too.
Thank you, Mark.
I've spent, you know, there's another, I'm trying, like, you know, you think about, everybody's like, oh, you know, they grow up so fast. You know, you hear that and it makes you sick, you know, and all that. But it's like, okay, what can I do to, like, combat that? You know, it's like, so when my son is like, Dad, will you come jump with me on the trampoline? Like, I'm trying to do my Rick's son impression when you, anytime you impersonate either of your boys, that it's like a very distinct. Yeah.
He turns 12 on Wednesday.
Dang. May 6th.
Yes.
5/6 and then 3/4.
That's the only way I can keep their birthdays straight. My oldest one was born on 5/6. My youngest one's born on 3/4. If it wasn't for that, there's no possible way I'd be able to remember.
And then you're a leap year. It's very easy.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
But it's like I'm trying for him to be batting 1,000. Like whenever he asks me, will you come jump with me? I'm trying, even if I'm like doing something, I'm going to say, hey, let me finish this and I'll be right there. Yeah. You know, like I want his memory to be, Dad never told me no. Corey. I like this. I like this setup where they just pop in.
The way
in.
We do this now is really awesome.
So we've been doing the intro and this is Corey. I told him that autocorrect made me look like an idiot.
He swore to me that your name was Cody.
And I'm blaming
saying Cody.
And I know, and I'm blaming something else. I'm not taking the blame, which is not a good thing. So hold on. I want to ask Corey this.
Yeah.
What is something we were just talking about? What is something that either you or society has picked up, like a behavior in this pandemic that you hope continues? And we were talking about, we see families outside taking walks and people seem. Rick's answer was like the familial like connectedness. We hope that kind of sticks around. How would you answer that question? Just jumping right in here.
Yeah, two things. One thing that I'm seeing relates to sleep, and I don't know how to interpret it yet, and because it's people are responding differently. Some people they're sleeping longer than usual, deeper than usual. Some people are sleeping less. But in general, I'm hearing a lot of my students and friends saying like I'm sleeping more than usual and feeling guilt around it. And my encouragement for people is to just follow the rhythm of your body right now, regardless of what other theories we could have around it. Sure, it could be you're not getting as much movement as usual and the body's just like all kind of messed up. But it could also be that there's just like a collective restoration that's going on from years, if not decades.
Yeah.
Of grinding ourselves.
Have you heard, Ricky, I don't know if you heard this on the ticket this morning. We listened to the same radio station in Dallas. I'm in West Texas. Rick is in the Dallas area. Where are you calling in from, by the way?
I'm from Palo Alto right now, but I'm from Long Island, New York.
Okay. Forget about it. Hey.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what we automatically go to.
That's like our shrimp on the Barbie reference.
Shrimp on the Barbie.
And if you're not from New York City or Australia, we got nothing. Yeah, those are our go-tos. Now I forgot what I was going to say. What was I saying?
Like he was talking about how like
sleep,
like the restoration
radio
kind of.
So there was a segment they did this morning about how people are having these crazy COVID dreams. And what they're saying is that it's not necessarily like you're having a dream because of like the virus, but it's like people are anxious.
Yeah.
Right. So there's this like kind of stress in our prefrontal cortexes, whatever. And then people are sleeping longer. And so you get into that full like REM, like dream state, like the longer you sleep. And so as people are like not having to wake up to get to, you know, they can just hop up at, you know, 10 minutes before their meeting starts instead of 2 hours if they're commuting. And so they're having these really vivid dreams, which I think is really, really interesting. And yeah, I think, yeah, the sleep thing is, it is really nice too to like, I don't know, there's something about at night to just be able to go, oh man, I don't have to wake up at 6 o'clock.
I haven't set an alarm in
Yeah. And I have gotten, now I have kids. So my kids are my alarm clock. So I haven't set an alarm bragging montage in several years, but it's because like they'll come in and like, Dad, I need to go be a choir early today. And I'm just like, and then I wake up, right? So, but yeah, not, and that's one thing I tell people when I'm talking to them about sleep is like, how many people wake up to an alarm? And I mean, it's always 100%. There's never a time where there's someone who just like doesn't raise their hand. It's like, you should not wake up to an alarm. And everyone's just like, there's no way. There is a way. You just got to go to bed earlier.
Yeah.
But see, for me, like, I'm like super go to bed early, man. Like, I'm in bed. This is nerd alert. I'm in bed typically by like 9:20 p.m. every night. What are you looking at me weird for, Mark?
Sorry, I'm changing
your name.
A weird
look on your face. Huh?
Sorry, I changed your name on your.
I changed my name. Super go to bed early, man. I'm usually in bed by like 9:20. I would say most of the time I'm probably asleep by like 9:45, 10 at the latest.
After you read one page of Count of Monte Cristo and fall asleep.
I have this elaborate, it's not really that elaborate, but like a sleep routine that I've been maintaining. I used to work nights for a really, really, really long time. And so I developed kind of this, you know, this sleep hygiene routine to help me get to bed. And I still maintain it now. And like right now I'm reading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It's going to take me like 3 years to read this book because I read like three pages of it.
Is it showing you a percentage and you're still on like 17% and you've been like reading it for two years? Like, oh, God.
But like, so I'm asleep by 10 p.m. and my alarm is set at 6. If my alarm didn't go off, I would sleep easily until 7:30. I just naturally am one of those people. I just need a lot of sleep, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I dated a girl in college who, if she didn't have an alarm, she would just sleep indefinitely, and not that's
wake
not
up at like dinner time.
No, like literally, she had this disorder that she could just sleep for days.
Go, sorry.
Yeah, good job, Mark. I mean, she managed it well, but like there are times where like if her alarm didn't go, she would just literally sleep for a day or two. I'd never heard of anything like that.
Jeez.
This sounds a little different, though.
Yeah. Okay. So we've already kind of recorded an intro. We talked about you a little bit, but we want to hear kind of your story, just kind of Cliff Notes version. Where, you know, Long Island, now you're way over on the other side. Like, tell us your story and kind of how you got to where you are.
Yeah, sure. Started getting into mindfulness and meditation in college.
At what college do you mind us asking?
I went to Allegheny College, small liberal arts school, Western PA.
Cool.
I think a lot of people, when they think about meditation teachers, they usually think, you know, very spiritual, or got into it because they were trying to reduce stress. I was trying to impress a girl. I had a hippie girlfriend. She was in a meditation. I wanted her to think I was cool.
Like, you come to this? Oh, man, I've been coming to this for years. Yeah. And they come up to you like, who are you?
Where the weight room is? Yeah. Afterwards, you know?
Yeah, I had a couple bouts of that with yoga and all the different clubs. So it started out for superficial reasons. And then interesting things started to happen. Not trippy things, but the first thing was related to sleep. I used to have awful sleep. I'd wake up close to 30 times a night. Jeez. It was just very light, restless sleep. Took sleep meds, didn't like them. They made me groggy. Started doing a meditation, which I was doing 10 minutes a day, 3 times a week. And went from waking up 30 times a night to only a couple times a night.
Oh, wow.
And it has been like that ever since. So that was the first big thing. I noticed my focus improved radically. And there was just this this new subtle sense of feeling happier without my external world changing, which was compelling to me. I was an economics major, though. Nobody in that economics department was talking about meditation. Right. So I was a closet meditator for a good 6 to 8 months. And then we took this trip to the New York Stock Exchange where we met with this multi-billionaire hedge fund manager. And everyone said, like, this is the guy you want to meet. This is where you want to get. This is who you want to learn from. Gave a talk. By the end of it, I felt like my soul was sucked out of my body. And and I just remember this like visceral repulsion to this man.
He was like, these are the stocks. These are the most tremendous stocks.
Call, buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell.
Exactly.
You met the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, but without any passion. The guy was like, yeah. Yeah. That would have probably excited me more.
That was offensive.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just sucked the life out of me. And I just remember thinking, like, I don't know what I want to do, but I don't want to end up like this guy. And it wasn't a jab against the finance world. It was more just like he literally had no life in him. And so I just got really curious, like, if that's not what I want, then what is it that I want? And everything kept being reduced to wanting to be happy, which is very trite, but
is it though?
Trite in the sense that you're going to see it all over Facebook, like life is all about happiness, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But I think most people at some point in their lives do come to that trite but profound recognition that like everything I'm doing really is in service of greater fulfillment.
Right.
Even the times where I'm sacrificing pain maybe for my children, it's because that is going to lead to some greater well-being, sense of meaning, sense of purpose.
Define happiness.
I see. Okay.
I know. I just threw that. That
was, different definitions. Yeah. Like there's the aggregate.
Well, as somebody that's done everything that you have, like your definition of happiness is going to be like a, you know, like your perspective is important here.
Yeah. Yeah. These days I see it as the mind resting more in the mind's inherent nature, which is like a definition that needs a definition.
Right.
But you know, if you think of most of our normal way of relating to life, the what we could call the ego structure, the sense of self that's trying to manufacture a life that makes sense, that feels good, it gets us caught in this constant push-pull relationship to things. Like, don't want this, want more of this. Don't want this, want more of this. And some of that is essential to get through life and kind of craft a life. But it is exhausting to be caught in that constant push-pull. This is what we do when we go to the gym, but you don't go to the gym 24 hours a day.
Right. I mean, Rick does, but yeah, I mean,
not everybody does.
Yeah.
When he's not sleeping. So there's a different kind of peace that comes from like stepping out of that constant pushing and pulling. And when a lot of us think of the mind, we think of thoughts, we think of like emotions, we think of problem solving. But, you know, in the Zen tradition, they might call that the small mind. That's just, you know, mental activity. There's another quality of mind that's called the big mind that isn't caught in those thoughts. It's not caught in the emotions. The awareness of your fear is not in fear. The awareness of your anger is not angry. And so when you learn to rest more in that place, you could call it consciousness, awareness, metacognition, it's inherently peaceful.
Is that grounded. Is that the same thing as the present?
We could call that we could call that presence. Resting in that place is resting in presence.
Gosh, there's like from your all these talking points that you have, like there's so many. We could just talk. We could do the whole time on sleep. We could do the whole time on just what we're talking about here. But let's get into some like practical stuff. I love the take five, and I love now that congratulations, the second ever video. This is our 227th episode over 7 years, or almost 7 years. This is the second recording where we can see our
video
hands.
Recording.
Yeah. Now you can like show us, take us through the take five.
Yeah, sure. Cool. All right. So take five is this, it's this very simple mindfulness exercise that I teach to kids all the way up to CEOs. And so anyone listening, whether you're watching or just tuning in via audio, we'll do this together. So you can take out your left hand like this, like you're holding a pizza pie. Hold it out in front of you.
Pizza pie, hey!
Got to bring the New York in. Take your right pointer finger, place it in the palm of your hand right around your wrist. So we're going to do is slide the pointer finger up the thumb, taking an inhale through the nose. So sliding up, inhale. Exhale, slide back down. Up the pointer finger, inhale. Back down, exhale. Up the middle finger, inhale. Back down. Ring. Back down. And pinky. Back down. Cool. So let's take five. It doesn't take more than about 25 seconds. The tactile nature of it, aligned with the breath or synced up with the breath, just seems to be very settling for the parasympathetic nervous system, which helps people relax.
What about the idea of like this cross connection? Like I've seen other stuff, and people, when I coach people, sometimes I'll have them, you know, do this, and that cross connection of the two sides of the body does something. You're doing that because you're touching, you're cross connecting. Is there something to that?
Yeah, that's above my pay grade, you know, or just outside of what I could speak intelligently to. Having done this over the years, there are people with Chinese medicine backgrounds that will often say like you're doing something with the meridians. And this tends to be like from more of like an NLP perspective, like behavioral conditioning, just right. Like very anchoring and settling. And maybe it is because there's some cross wiring going on with the brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
I just remember Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
That's all you could see. You couldn't see his head, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You just turn around and there he is. Oh, man, that's good.
Here's my contribution to the show today. You know,
this is something like for those listening that have kids, I mean, truly teach this to them. I have a YouTube video, just search like Take Five Corey Mascara.
Yes.
I teach this to schools. Within a week, the whole school is doing Take Five. It's simple and seemingly like how is petting my pinky going to save my life? It's not going to have this radical shift, but it will often like reduce our stress by 5 to 10 percentage points. And that over time accumulates. Because burnout's happening in the margins.
Right.
It's not like you're having one significant negative event and then just like you can't do life anymore.
Well,
we're stretching ourselves.
Speaking of the weight room, right? It's like if you just do 5 push-ups every day, that's a very small amount. But that like doing 5 push-ups a day is better than doing like, you know, 500 push-ups on New Year's Eve, right? Like you're like there's that accumulation of stuff that's good, right, for your brain. There's another practice that I wanted to talk about, this the water jug focus. And when I read about this, my first thought was, okay, when my kids are 10, 9, and 6, I'm going to start doing this. It doesn't mention kids in the talking points or whatever, but I wanted to ask your opinion on, okay, the kids are freaking out, go fill up a glass of water and hand it to them and say, walk around the kitchen for 5 minutes or whatever. Like, is that going to help them?
It's a great idea. I've actually never heard anyone take that and do that. It's cool. So I'll just preface this by saying my one fear with some of these mindfulness exercises is that they can get used as like behavioral
training,
right. The bells and it's like very pleasant and it's like, okay, shut up kids. And you're just like banging it in their ears. With the water jug, though, what I love about that, if it's used in an inviting kind of playful way, it really occupies all your attention. And so I'll share for people.
So Rick has no idea what we're talking about. I've read the thing. Yeah. Rick has no idea.
So this, the water jug exercise, when I was in Burma, and for those, I didn't mention this, but so I after the whole New York Stock Exchange experience and getting into meditation, I went over to Southeast Asia after I graduated college.
You chased the girl to Burma, and then she left, and you were stuck there. Yeah.
So 6 months silent retreat, very intensive meditation practice, 14 hours a day, where all you have to do is practice. And you know,
6 months?
Only like 4 hours a day.
Dang.
Yeah. So
there goes Jen.
Yeah.
That was my way. She's not used to the whole recording part of it yet, I guess. Yeah.
Hey, Jen. and so part of that is like you're really working on developing high degrees of concentration and awareness each day. It's a huge part of the practice. But there are a lot of times throughout the day where your mind just zones out, whether you want it to or not. And so I needed to develop at least in that context, I was trying to develop certain techniques that would help me sustain my focus, even in those moments where I was very tired or fatigued. So one of the things I created was this water jug exercise, which is, isn't that profound, but I'd fill a cup of water all the way to the tippy top, right to the brim.
Where it kind of raises up above. I remember that in science. There's like some sort of, I don't know what it is.
Meniscus. It's called a meniscus.
No, that's your knee thing.
No, it is called a meniscus.
It's the knee thing. I had surgery on it. I think I would know. I'm just kidding. I know it's a meniscus. Okay. Yeah, that's where it comes up over.
Cool. Yep. So the meniscus, yeah, right over the top. So the slightest bit of movement is going to cause that water to fall over. Now, what's awesome about this exercise and what you do, you pick it up and you just practice walking back and forth in a line. It requires you to be highly focused, but also highly relaxed. Right. Hey.
Hey, Jen.
My kids. Hey, Jen. Yeah, and my daughter. I'm doing this on you, the water
jug. Speaking of highly focused, Mark.
Yeah.
Speaking of highly focused.
Sorry, let me get my cup. I need to go fill this up with water. Hang on, I'll be right back.
And so doing this exercise requires high focus, but very low strain. And a lot of times when people are thinking about being concentrated or focused in their lives, it's a very highly caffeinated, grit your teeth, kind of like get through it.
Right.
And it's just, you can do it. You could work that way. I wrote portions of my book that way, but it's not sustainable. And I think if we look at like the kind of presence we want to bring into our life, it's this relaxed but highly attuned quality of awareness. And so this exercise trains that very high attunement to the moment, very high degree of focus, but also simultaneously very relaxed. Right. You just do that for like 5-10 minutes and you give it to your kid and will occupy their attention.
Right. And not as a punishment, but as like, the daughter who just walked by here, she deals with some anxiety stuff. And if she's going through one of those moments, like, hey, here, take this, walk around with this cup. You're right. And it's like, focus, like stop focusing on this.
Completely. There's, you know, it's kind of similar to some techniques I've heard before, like grounding techniques where if you're feeling really anxious, technique somebody taught me once is you close your eyes and you try to think of 5 things that you can hear, you know, and like in that complete silence. And what that's, at least how it works for me, is that takes my mind, whatever is spinning my mind at a million RPMs, I have to completely shut that off if I'm sitting in a quiet room, because yeah, you might be able to think of like one thing you can hear, like, you know, right now, like the air conditioning, but like, there's going to be 4 other things that I'm going to have to focus very intently on. And if I'm focusing on those things, then whatever's going on up here has to slow down and stop, or I can't hear those things.
I've also heard about, you know, telling your kids like, all right, stand on one leg, you know, like, and then when they stand on one leg, right, you've got to like, now
kick them in the chest.
Yeah. then you push them down and say, that's what, yeah.
It occupies what is called psychic energy in psychology, and not we're not talking psychic powers, but just like it's mental energy. So if you've studied flow states by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, that happens when the complexity of the task at hand is met with your capacity to meet that complexity.
Right.
And so here you have like something that's a complex task, but not overwhelming, like you can do it. And it requires all of your effort and energy to be funneled toward that. With that full immersion of attention, there's not space for the mind to ruminate. Now, it will happen the more familiar you get with the task.
Which leads us into my next question. And we talk about a lot about mindfulness and meditation and on the show over the years. And I know people think when they hear meditation, they think, all right, I'm going to try this meditation thing.
Ooh.
Right. They're going to sit down. Yeah. I'm going to shut my mind off. They sit down and half a second later, their mind wanders and they're like, oh, all right, I'm done. I can't
suck at this.
Right. So, but I love, you know, Rick will particularly like this point, 'cause he really enjoys the weight room. And you've got a point about how, and the way that I try to say it is when you lose that focus and recognize it and come back to whatever it is your focal point is, that is like, I call that like the below parallel squat. That is like, that's where the magic happens. You have a deal where you call it the bicep curl for your brain. Like, let's expand on that. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, let's just take a basic, very basic meditation practice, focusing on the breath. Everyone thinks that that's what meditation is solely about. It's not. It's just one potential focus point.
Right.
But it's a worthy one. So you're sitting down, you bring your attention to the felt sense of your body breathing. And let's say for 5 minutes, you're just practicing bringing your sustained attention there. Well, after probably 7 seconds, the mind's going to start thinking about weird things and the Lion King and how tragic it was.
I haven't watched it yet. Thanks a lot.
Way to go, Corey. Yeah.
Put that off the DVR list.
Yeah. And so in those moments, that's where people start thinking, I suck at the meditation. I can't do this, blah, blah, blah. That's the mind wandering. And so very simply what we're doing, we notice the mind wander, we bring it back to the breath. Wanders off again, we bring it back to the breath. Wanders off again, bring it back to the breath. So that wandering and coming back is in the same way, like the weight of the dumbbell pulls the arm down, we pull it back up, pull it down, pull it back up. You need the weight of the dumbbell in order to do the exercise.
To create the resistance, right.
Exactly. And so we could get into philosophical ideas of like what it would mean to live a life without any thoughts. But in reality, like when it's not going to happen. We need thoughts to even navigate this conversation and especially to parent and walk across the street. And so we use thoughts as an opportunity just to understand how to work with them more skillfully, but also how to develop focus. Right. Every thought that comes up and pulls your attention away is an opportunity. It's the weight of the dumbbell, the weight of the world pulling you away, and you get to pull it back. Mm. And the more times you pull it back, in the same way the bicep gets stronger, the brain gets stronger.
Well, and that's why they call it a practice, right? Because you sit down and you're gonna do this intentional practice, right? So then later on in the day, your kids are going crazy. Instead of you just like snapping at them, right? You have this resistance built up and this muscle that you can notice that you're about to say something to your kids or whatever at work that you are going to regret. And you can like disconnect and kind of come back, right? That's so that you can't just do that. You can't just like go out and be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, you know, without doing anything. Like you've got to work at it.
Sounds like it helps give you more control over yourself. And really, like yourself, you are all you can control, you know.
Yeah,
that makes sense. You know, I like we talk about the serenity prayer sometimes, you know, the accepting things you can't change, the courage to change the things you can. Well, that's one of the things that you can control, like your thoughts that way, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, it gives you more control over yourself.
Yeah. So there's this quote that's often attributed to Viktor Frankl, but
love Viktor Frankl. Man's Search for Meaning. Rick, you need to read Man's Search for Meaning. It's one of the greatest books of all time.
I just read it this morning.
No, you didn't. It's only a 5-hour audiobook. It'll take you 2.5 hours to read it.
It's great. So there's a quote that says, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And then in our response lies our growth and our freedom. We could think of mindfulness practice and cultivating presence as learning to see that space and then inhabit that space. Because it's only in that space that you can lead your life with any sort of intentionality, purpose, and alignment with your values. The opposite is living on automatic pilot. And this is the experience most of us are familiar with living, whether we realize it or not. We're running the same patterns of thought, the same emotional reactivities, behavioral reactivities. And so this basic practice of just monitoring what is the mind doing, and instead of letting it proliferate wherever it wants to go, just gently encouraging it back to a specific point, you're both developing the awareness of what leads to certain actions and feelings in each moment, and simultaneously the capacity to not get swept away by that. In many ways, it's a form of mental fitness, and you have a gym on every street corner, but right. Seldom are we taught how to actually develop these capacities of mind.
I love the Seinfeld bit about he's talking to the crowd, you know, and he's like, all right, women, I'm going to tell you the secret. I'm going to tell you what men are thinking. This secret will change how your relationships work, how you react to men. You want to know what men are thinking? I'll tell you. Nothing. we're just walking around looking around. I say that all the time, like when people are like, hey, what's up, what are you doing? I'm like, just walking around looking around.
I've got a question quick, because I know we're getting short on time. Have you a very, very good friend of mine started taking like a free online course about happiness from Yale University.
Oh,
are you familiar with this at all?
Yeah, with the woman Santos, I forget.
I think that's her name. Yeah, and yeah, I signed up to take it. I haven't started it yet, but I was wondering if you had, if you've heard of this.
Do they need your transcript to get into Yale? I mean, is this a?
I called and they're like, "Oh, well, please come." And I was like, "Plano East. Okay, just calm down. All right, I'll get there when I get there. All right."
Yeah, so that's coming from more of the positive psychology literature, which is a whole other domain that I work in. I'm an instructor of positive psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. They have a master's program in positive psychology there. At Yale, they have a course, they're a very popular course, the Science of Happiness course. Mm-hmm. I don't know about their online program. I know she is running a podcast right now called Happiness Lab or Happiness Labs. That's supposedly very popular. That people
is it like the dogs, like Labradors, like no. Happiness Labs. Just
no, they are
right, dad.
You get one of those and you're immediately happy.
Right, that's the whole secret to life. Buy a Labrador. Yeah,
yeah, but that course, I could give my best guess what it would be about, and it's probably the latest science, positive psychology, which is really the science of happiness. Mindfulness is imbued in that, but there's also a lot of other wonderful literature. And so it's something I would definitely suggest checking out for sure.
I was supposed to come to State College in October for the Ohio State-Penn State game, but we've already bought the tickets. We've already got the Airbnb. Don't know if it's going to happen. So
it's not.
Be up in your neck of the woods.
I know that it's not going to happen.
You shut your mouth. Okay, we're out of time, but there's a few little things we got to wrap up here. One thing I like to ask guests, like, what are, like, you mentioned Viktor Frankl, like, what are, like, two or three books that you just are like, I have a couple of books and I'm just like, you got to read this. Stop what you're doing. Read Anti-Fragile or read whatever it is. Like, what are your, like, two or three, like, must reads that you read just kind of all the time?
Yeah. One of my favorites is a book, Ishmael. Wow, I haven't read that in years, but I read that in 2012. I'm not even going to go into too much what it's about.
Do you remember the author is? I'm writing it down for the show notes.
I'm going to say it wrong. I'm going to say Dan Quayle, but that's not right. He wrote The Talent.
Dan Quayle was the vice president of the United States.
Oh, way to go, Mark.
I think he's also an author.
Oh. Not that Dan Quayle.
Oh, wait, I have it.
Well, I can probably look it up. I just
Daniel
didn't know.
Quinn.
Daniel Quinn, that's what it is. Yeah.
Net.com, everybody.
Big fan of that book. And I'll give you one out of left field, and people might be very confused by this one, but it's called Wild Power. And it's all about the menstrual cycle. Oh. So
my partner teaches,
she's a director of positive sexuality at Stanford. And she's really opened my eyes to like being in relationship to the feminine. And the menstrual cycle is just this thing as a society that we tend to condemn or look at something to manage, both men and women. It's a cultural thing. But the book is all about living attuned to the rhythm and the cycles of it. And it's a metaphor for living in tune with the cycles of our life. And I think that's something we need to get back to as human beings, like really attuning to our internal cycles.
I think men also have cycles. We just don't have like a physical, like manifestation of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's different
for sure. I mean, we always talk about on the show, we always talk about how we think that, you know, the moon cycle affects the ocean, which is a pretty large thing, right? And somehow like, oh, it doesn't affect me though. Like, no, these like natural cycles absolutely affect you.
When I turn into a werewolf is when we have the full
moon. And you think about all legends are like based on some sort of truth, right? And so it's like the whole werewolf thing came out of people are just weird on the full moon. Like kids, if you're a teacher, or like have kids, like it's just, there's something about the full moon. People are just different. They're weird and they grow fangs and eat your throat if you catch them in the woods. Okay, promote yourself, tell everybody the website, the book, all that stuff. Tell everybody where they can
Anyone wants free meditations or resources, you can just text your email address to 631-405-4631.
Hold on,
631-405-4631. And so that'll just give you a bunch of free stuff.
What do they text that number?
So you text your email address as if you're saying like, hey friend, put your email address in that box and then just put that number as the number you're texting.
Okay, cool.
They'll send an automated email to your inbox.
Give it to me one more time.
631
Okay.
405-4631
Got it.
And if you're texting outside of the US, just add plus one before that.
If it's Australia, put g'day, mate.
G'day.
So that's a great place to get free stuff. If you want to follow more of my teachings, go to mindfulness.com/Corey
Wait, hold on. You got mindfulness.com?
I don't, but I'm co-host of the app.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Together. Yeah. It's a great domain name. Yeah.
Hey, Corey, I just got a text from you. Thanks for listening. In a few minutes, you'll see an email from me.
Hey, you did
it. See right to type it out. That's crazy.
It's automated.
And then the last place, Instagram. I'm right now. I'm running a 21-day meditation, 21 days of live meditation. Cool. Not sure where we'll be at when this podcast comes out, but I will try and be doing those more regularly, so people can find me at Corey Muscara, CoryMuscara.
Not Cody, right?
Shut up!
I swore to God.
I was very clear on that. Okay, and you, what's your book on Amazon? Talk about your book.
Yeah, my book's called Stop Missing Your Life, How to Be Deeply Present in an Unpresent World. You can find that on Amazon, in bookstores, and it's really I wrote it to be one of the most practical and accessible books on mindfulness.
My wife is hosing the window, and I thought, I don't know what I thought was happening, like what that noise was. So say the name of the book again, Stop What?
It's called Stop Missing Your Life.
Yeah, okay. Mark, Stop Missing Your Life.
Jeez, like, did you see? I thought like, I don't know what I thought.
Is that a euphemism?
I don't. What are we? No, it's not. Okay, and then finally, the last question that we ask all of our guests: what is something that you enjoy about life, or something you do to make life more enjoyable, like a hobby, or just something that you just look forward to? Like, I went mountain biking today, which I love.
Yeah.
Mountain biking. What are you? What is like your thing?
Golf. Golf's been my thing since I was a kid. Wanted to be a professional golfer for a while. It's still my go-to place.
Have you been able to play golf during all of this?
Not golf courses are shut down in Palo Alto here. But I did find a field the other day, and I'm going to bring my sticks out there in a bit.
Okay.
I've been watching. The Golf Channel is on in the weight room when I'm working out every day. I've been watching the golf.
The golf.
You know what? That looks like that.
Michael Jordan
fun.
Played a lot.
Yeah. I don't know how to play golf, but looks like that would be fun.
So Palo Alto, what is that? The biggest nearby city is
San Francisco.
San Francisco. Okay, I was making sure I have my geography right before I start talking about it. So I was there. Long story. I told this story to Rick. I was there, and my wife was like doing a work thing, and I rented one of those Lime scooters. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think those are here anymore.
Well. I Ubered to San Diego State. No.
Good story.
Right?
San Francisco.
Maybe. It was a college around San Francisco. Long story short, I was on one of those lines, and I ended up, like, I was going to try to come all the way back to the hotel from this campus, and it was like 8 miles, and I ended up on like the access road of one of the interstates, and I crashed, and it was this horrible thing.
Wow. Well, that was an awesome story.
That was all. That was my story. So I love Palo Alto.
Hey, I got a story too. Stanford. The other day I saw a bird.
Awesome. I saw a dog today. Who cares about your stupid dog? Awesome. All right, Corey. I really don't. I feel like we need to have you back on. If you will.
Yes,
you
I feel like we just kind of started scratching the
So screen. When this goes up, there will be an audio and a video version, obviously, on our YouTube channel. I'm going to also email you the Calendly link. And let's, cool. I mean, I think we're like into August, September, so it'll be a while. But if you would be willing to come back on, I think this is you're exactly the kind of person that we want to hear from on this show. So this has been awesome.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Thank you.
All right. That went by really fast. All right. Corey, thank you so much. And I'm going to remove Corey from the call. And then we will do the outro. So remove. Right. Oh, it's so sad. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Bye, have a good night. Appreciate it.
You're listening to the Simply Human Podcast.
All right. That was good.
There's like remove, and then are you sure? And then okay. So you're like, okay, goodbye. And you hit remove. And then it's like three other things that you're like.
I do like how we're doing it. How that, it's an awkward dismount. Like, yeah. All right, man, thanks for showing up. now we're going to get rid of you.
Yeah. Would you please remove yourself? Please leave.
By the way, something we do need to tell people.
Did you say nude?
I did say nude on accident. Something we do need to tell people.
Okay.
There subscribe. Should be a subscribe button on the YouTube.
Right there?
On the YouTubes.
Wait, is it over there?
I don't know.
I think it's right there.
It's either here. It's not so much here.
Or here. Right in this right region here.
Please subscribe, okay? We're not going to, like, inundate you with, like, 10 billion videos, but please subscribe. This way we can, you know, offset some of the – eventually we can offset some of the costs of producing this. And we promise not to take a lot of videos of Mark telling pointless stories that he forgets all the details. And
I think I got halfway through that story and realized that it was in San Diego, not Palo Alto. So I felt like a big idiot.
Yeah, that's –
Which Wales. which is my life, San Diego, San Diego.
Yeah.
I finished Spanish 1, and I'm on to Spanish 2.
Good.
I'm learning past participles. Todavía no, not yet.
What?
Todavía no, like not okay. yet. I'm learning. I learned qué tal is another way you can say how's it going.
What you need to do is you need to start watching. And I'm dead
soap serious. Operas?
Novelas are good because they're so expressive in their faces that, like, if you're, like, watching – I've tried watching the news before, and the news is difficult.
Because they're just so deadpan.
Straight and
yeah.
very stoic.
Yeah.
But if you're watching novelas, then they'll like – you can't miss, like, what's happening. Like, you might not pick up on all the words, but you're like, okay, something's crazy is going on right there.
Right.
But also, like, it's a – like. I don't want to say like immersion, like you have to move to Mexico, but like that's how you fix an accent.
Right.
That's
right,
how
right.
you get the right accent is by listening. And that's like, I have bragging montage, a pretty decent Spanish accent. It's because I hang out with like a ton of Spanish speakers at work.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's one thing you can do. Also.
So the pin,
watch shows like, what's the name of the show?
Pudge Rodriguez.
Elena del Sur. La Reina del Sur is the Queen of the South. It's on Netflix, and you can put the captioning on there.
So you can kind of
screen, so you can read and okay. at the same time.
Okay. So PimSlur is the audio deal that I'm doing, which is like every like Spanish one was 30 minute like audio things that I'm repeating back and all that. Mm-hmm. Then Duolingo is the other thing that I'm doing, and my 9-year old. Has been watching me do it. She has it on her little device, and she's been doing it. And I'm like, I wish I had started learning Spanish when I was 9.
Yeah.
You know, like when my brain is not all gummed up with malted Hobbs and bong resin. From what movie?
Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy. That was a Tommy Boy quote, everyone.
Your brain has a thick candy shell.
Surprised you didn't know that.
Surprised you didn't know that.
Got that? Shut up, Richard. My brain does not have bong resin in it. I don't even know what that is.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've never put a bong to my lips.
Everyone believes you.
On my honor. Okay. okay. There was one other thing. Okay. I asked you the two questions. I think that's it. I think we're good. This is. I'm trying to keep these under an hour. I got this new software. iMovie is out. Is down the toilet, so I bought this other thing and it worked. So our YouTube channel is up, and then we've got, you know, the new audio stuff and everything else.
Hey, we
is
got
going.
A Twitter, right?
Yeah, at simplyhuman52.
Okay, we should start like doing some
tweeting.
Social media stuff.
We
I don't know. Why don't you holler at us? Not you, but like you listening, watching
at simplyhuman52.
You have suggestions. You have stuff you want to hear
us.
More about. You have funny stories,
Suggestions
pictures.
Of videos you want us to do.
Yeah, like it's your show. I mean, we just do it. But
we should play the game where you hold the phone up and do the thing.
No one knows what that is.
You hold it up. You go like that. All caught up on the Michael Jordan series.
I'm addicted to it. I love it.
I got to tell you this, and then we got to wrap up. Okay. I have wanted. When I was in, 1984 was when the ones came out. So I was.
No, 85.
Was it 85?
Yeah.
The 84-85 season? Mm-hmm.
Well, 85 is when the ones came out.
So then that means.
Because he didn't like immediately jump into the league and they gave him ones.
That, well, in the thing last night, they said that Nike signed him. I didn't realize that Nike was such a nothing.
They were nothing.
They were
a track company.
Yeah. which I knew that. I knew that's how they started, but I didn't realize that when they signed Jordan, like they were taking a huge gamble.
They were like fourth place.
Michael
by like
Jordan.
A mile.
That's why when you watch that, that's why his like silhouette, the dunking guy, is on everything. It's on football uniforms because he made Nike. He single-handedly made Nike.
Nike has a separate brand.
Air Jordan.
The Jordan brand.
Yeah.
The Jordan brand. And so like, yeah.
But if
Nike
it wasn't
stuff,
for him, if
Jordan.
They hadn't signed him and he hadn't been became what he was, Nike would be not
Think of
nothing.
The foresight of the – it goes both ways. Think of the foresight of the Nike executives to be like, hey – this guy is going to be and they didn't think he was going to be the greatest player in the history of basketball. No one knew that. But their goal was to sell like 3 million shoes.
And they sell like 180 million or something?
Million the first year. But like the foresight of them to be like, hey, you know what? We're like number four shoe company by like a mile. We're going to hitch our wagon to this guy. And it's going to be good.
Like, it could have been Ron Artest or somebody that like turned into like, you know, this crazy person. I will say this very quickly. I had started to swing over to the LeBron James is the greatest of all time camp. Wait,
oh,
stop.
Wrong.
Just wait. I had started to swing. Okay. After watching all this and remembering that LeBron James does not transcend basketball. He did not. He was not a cultural icon like Jordan was.
You have to think of like if culture and society is a lot different now than it was 25 years ago. But what's telling for me watching the show is you forget about like if you piss Jordan off, he was going to shove 55 points straight up your Duke shoot,
and
was
I love
like no problem.
He and Arnold Schwarzenegger are very similar.
These like these perceived slights, like they talked about in episode 5 last night about when they played. Croatia. And
oh, the Tony Kukoc.
Croatia. They had never met Tony Kukoc. By all accounts, he's a super nice guy. He was going to be like.
He
a
never
really,
said
really
anything bad about
player.
Anybody.
He never did anything to anybody. Yeah. But him and Pippen were like, man, all Jerry Krause talks about is Kukoc. We're going to go beat his and they like just like ripped him a new one and like completely demoralized him. It's just these like, it's what makes Michael Jordan a huge piece of crap, like a bad, not a very good person, is also what made him like the greatest athlete in the history of professional sports. Yep. You can say Muhammad Ali all day, but I don't think there's ever been someone with this singular focus, and that's good and bad, but the singular focus, it just, I have this laser beam focus on being the greatest that ever lived. And you think about when they had their, they won the title in 91. They won in 92. They were one of three teams that had ever won back-to-back NBA titles, the Pistons, the Lakers, and the Celtics. And then no one since the Celtics had ever three-peated. And he did it twice in the modern era of, like, you know, kind of more competitive.
Yeah.
But
pretty
crazy. It's kind of what makes him a terrible teammate is because he was a huge jerk and treated everybody like garbage. But that's because no one else on planet Earth possesses this, like, singular laser beam focus on one specific goal. It was crazy.
Hold on. There was something I was saying about that.
LeBron?
Maybe. No, it was before that. I didn't even mean to bring up the – oh, so when I was in third grade, I think is when threes came out. Or maybe it was second grade. However it turns out, I wanted the threes.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. They were like $100 back then.
$120.
There's no way I could have ever gotten the threes, especially with two older brothers. No way. And like you go on eBay, they're like, you can buy them new. They're like $380 on eBay. And I'm just like, I want some threes.
Are those the ones with the silver tongue?
Well, they're different versions. They were the ones with like the plastic thing that came
on the
side.
Outside, like the little arch looking things. Yeah, yeah.
But like that one game where he wore the ones in Madison Square Garden, like.
And like blew his, like ripped his feet
His feet were all bloody.
You think you could be like, hey, Nike, I want you to make a modern pair of shoes that
looks
like
the ones.
So I can wear them at
Madison. He's not actually wearing like Chucks. Yeah.
I don't know which ones they were. I think they were the fours. The ones that had like the silver tongue and like the plastic, like the kind of clear plastic thing on the outside.
Yeah.
Those are the first ones that I wanted. And they're like
$110,
$115.
No way.
I was in fifth grade.
No way.
And I was going to mow lawns and do everything to get the money. And I ended up having like $80. And I was tired of working, so I just got Bo Jackson.
All right. I have a good and remember. I already wrote it down. So.
No.
That's the good. sounds like pre-recorded. All right. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Simply Human Podcast.
And remember,
she had this disorder that she could just sleep for days.
Go, sorry.
Yeah, good job, Mark.
So until next time, enjoy.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.